So welcome back to everyone. This is not so good. Let me see if I can, if I hold it. There we go. That's better. So I realize that I'm not including the phrases this morning in the talk, which is why I then threw them into our morning sit. And thank you for the yogi who reminded us of that lovely way of, years ago, I was on the staff of a teen mindfulness retreat. I did it for a number of years and was so lovely teaching mindfulness and meditation to 15 to 19 year olds. And another woman who's been part of SIMS since for a long time, she and I were both on the staff. And at night after the teens would go to bed, we would walk around and sing the may you be filled with loving kindness phrases to them. And it was so great because these kids who are, you know, 15 to 19 year olds, they know everything, they got it, etc. And they loved being sung to sleep. It was so sweet. They go, will you sing to us in the morning? Anyway, just a sweet memory that came up. So this morning, I'm going to give a brief introduction to the Brahma Viharas, share some thoughts about the second half of the title of our day long on this being times of strife and division, and then suggest some ways that our practice, the Dhamma, can help our hearts and minds stay open and kind as we continue to engage with the world. There are different ways that different teachers create context for these hard practices. Sharon Salzberg, who's written a number of books on loving kindness, she puts them into the framework of desire. Other teachers I've heard put the Brahma Viharas into the context of the heart being even greater and wiser than the mind. And one of the frameworks that I really like and that I'm going to share with you this morning comes from Bhikkhu Bodhi. I don't know if you're familiar with him. He's a U.S.-born monk, took his robes in Sri Lanka. He's written a lot of books, and he's also the founder of Buddhist Global Relief. He's very engaged in the world. And I really like how he frames the Brahma Viharas, where they fit into the practice. He places them within the defilements of greed, hatred, and delusion. And those are called kind of like the three poisons. It is, in his words, these drives of greed, hatred, and delusion that have brought us into this world of strife and suffering. And it's these same drives, these are his words, that keep the wheel of history turning, erupting periodically in orgies of senseless violence. Kind of rings true. And he describes what the Buddha offered to us, a path to freedom that includes using this language, which is often used, of crossing the stream of the defilements and getting to the safety of the other shore. One of the essential steps in our effort to reach the other shore is to use, again, Bhikkhu Bodhi's words, to lay down the rod. The rod in this case is violence, aggression, and harmfulness towards any other living being, and to develop a mind of harmlessness. And it's found by putting ourselves in the place of another. Putting ourselves in a place of another, just as each of us, in our innermost nature, desire to be well and happy, like the song, may we be filled with loving kindness. May I be peaceful and well and happy. May I be free from harm, danger, and distress. So do all others want the same. We practice to purify our minds of these afflictive states of animosity and cruelty. And we do it in a number of ways, through the practice of concentration and our mindfulness practice, the development of wisdom, living a moral life, really taking on the precept of sila, of morality, and by developing what is known as the antidotes to these poisons. And those are the divine abodes of the Brahmaviharas, loving kindness, compassion, joy, and equanimity. And Bhikkhu Bodhi talks about how these afflictive states of animosity, they live in the hidden roots, these deep, dark recesses of the mind. And then he says that the state of the world is a manifestation and reflection of the mind of its inhabitants. So our training and practice with these antidotes, with this kindness, the loving kindness, with compassion and care, that's our contribution to making a change in the state of the world. There's a Burmese teacher whose name is Ute Janiya, some of you may be familiar with. And he says that the defilements are just part of nature, that all of what goes on in us is part of nature. So if they're part of nature, will we ever actually eliminate hate and ill will from our minds and hearts? I don't know the answer to that. But the important thing is to know when they're present, understand to the best of our ability kind of what's brought them about, what they feel like, sit with them, and then to choose to act appropriately and not act from that hate and ill will. The Brahmaviharas are a key practice in striking down the thoughts of hate. They're called the divine abodes. And as I understand it, it's because when one is skilled in goodness and knows the path of peace, that phrase might be familiar to you. It's the beginning of the Metta Sutta. That when we are skilled in goodness and know the path of peace, we are aligned with the divine beings, the Brahmas. So the Brahmaviharas are boundless and immeasurable. Their very nature is inclusive. Boy, this is my computer is wanting to go backwards. This is interesting. Let me just see where I am. Okay. Their very nature, the nature of the Brahmaviharas, is inclusive. They incline the heart and mind to meet the world and everything in it in every moment with kindness, compassion, joy, and equanimity. Practicing with these heart qualities helps transform our hearts into what number of teachers and Narayan Liebenson is the title of her book, a magnanimous heart. An ancient Zen teacher, Dogen, says that the entire practice, the entire path, is a process of deepening intimacy with life. And the Brahmaviharas are a way of becoming more intimate with life. Okay, I need to stop using that little arrow. And it all begins with metta, wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be at ease. Metta, softening, a tenderizing of the heart towards all of life. A position for understanding that all of life is interconnected. Like Bhikkhu Bodhi says, you know, we put ourselves into the place of others. It's an all-encompassing container of friendliness towards life. It's defined often as loving kindness. Other words are friendliness, standing next to, or just caring. It's the first of the Brahmaviharas, and the others flow from it. When metta meets suffering of the world, compassion, or in Pali, karuna, is brought forth. It's when the heart responds to suffering. It feels the pain of that suffering and responds. When metta meets the joy of the world, sympathetic joy or mudita is brought forth. It feels the happiness of others and celebrates it. And when metta is brought with us to all things that unfold, balance, equanimity, upekkha is brought forth. The first three Brahmaviharas of metta, kindness, compassion, and joy owe their boundless nature to equanimity, that ability to embrace all things impartially. This is a wonderful shorthand way of describing the Brahmaviharas. I learned it from Jill Shepherd, who's a teacher from Australia. She describes the Brahmaviharas as four faces of love. And Ken, I think we can put those in the chat later. And if you don't remember them, you can email me at suz@seattleinsight. I can send them to you. So she describes the Brahmaviharas as four faces of love. Metta is the love that connects. Karuna is the love that responds. Mudita is the love that celebrates. And upekkha is the love that allows. So Bhikkhu Bodhi thinks that we're going to be extricating these poisons from us. But a different teacher from Clear Mountain Monastery, Ajahn Kovilo, it was just last Saturday or maybe two Saturdays ago, he was translating one of the chants that we do from Pali into English. It's the chant, it's the loving kindness chant where it starts with, I will abide, pervading one quarter with a heart imbued with loving kindness. And it goes on to one quarter of the heart imbued with compassion and on and on. And he says in the original Pali, the word I doesn't even appear anywhere. Rather, the qualities of loving kindness, compassion, joy, and equanimity pervade our very essence. I love that word pervade, meaning that it's present and apparent throughout, spread through and through, and perceived in every part. It's often used like if you cook cabbage and then the smell pervades your house. But I think it's also an appropriate word to describe the heart practices, that this sense of caring, this softening of the heart towards ourselves and the world pervades our very being. They're part of our very nature. When we see somebody struggling, you know, without a home, with a health issue, or just a friend who's having a difficult moment, and your heart just responds. Or for those of us who have the benefit of being around little ones, little kids, and you hear them giggle and be goofy, and just a big grin just comes to your face and you feel that warmth inside. This is the quality of the Brahmaviharas that have pervaded our very beings. We are friendly and we care about others. And it's the natural response that just looks at others and says, you are just like me. We are all products of conditioning. We all deep inside want happiness and be free of pain and dissatisfaction. And like me, you often seek happiness in ways that kind of don't work. Like me, you know, the teachings of dependent origination, we all start with and often fall back to ignorance. And with practice, we gain understanding and wisdom. Like me, we're all attached to our views and opinions, and they often act as an obstacle to that natural heart quality. I'd like to spend a few minutes talking about the second half of the title of our day-long on strife and divisiveness. I think we probably all agree, and that may be why you're all here, is that those are good descriptive words. But I've been around a long time. I'm an old lady. And as I reflect on life in the 1960s, when I was in my 20s, strife and divisiveness were the name of the game. But not just in my lifetime. Steve has taught me about, in the Buddhist times, his cousin tried to kill him a whole bunch of times. Then one of his main supporters was murdered by his son. And then we know the society of the Buddha 2,600 years ago was very divided. I recently read this very interesting article about the 8 most contentious presidential elections in our history. I'm going to just share 2 of them with you. In 1800, Thomas Jefferson and Aaron Burr were tied, and the election went to the House. Alexander Hamilton lobbied to support Jefferson. He became president. 3 years later, Burr killed Hamilton. In 1860, when Lincoln was elected, he got only 40% of the popular vote. Weeks after his election, South Carolina seceded from the nation and the Civil War started. And then there's the history of name calling and nastiness. Oh my goodness. Some of these candidates for president were called monarchist. My favorite is lecherous beast. One was called a murderer, and Andrew Jackson's mother was maligned as a prostitute. We don't have to even just look at presidential elections to just look at the history of our country and of racial violence from the very beginnings. And then in the 1960s, there was so much violence, both in terms of this Vietnam War and the Civil Rights Movement, the assassinations of John F. Kennedy, Robert F. Kennedy, Martin Luther King, Schwerner, Cheney, and Goodman, the 3 civil rights workers in 1964. You know, we live in a world filled with strife and divisiveness. It's not unique to this time. We live in a world filled with the 3 poisons of greed, hatred, and delusion that then manifest and have been concretized in systems of inequality, violence, and ignorance. Narayan Levinson was recently at Seattle Insight and gave a talk, and this comes from her book, where she says, we practice so that we can meet the conditions in life with greater grace rather than drowning in their midst. And I think the Brahmaviharas and the heart practices really can help us meet the conditions of life with greater grace and not drown in the midst. So the Brahmaviharas are beautiful. It's wonderful practicing with them, but they're not easy. Some of you spoke this morning when we were checking in about it can not always be an easy way. For some of you, you know, metta has been a refuge, a pathway back into the practice. For the first number of years, I thought the whole metta practice felt phony, fake. It didn't make any sense to me. It took me years to come to a place of, oh, there were some inner barriers to even opening my heart in that way. So now I have pretty easy access to the sensations of the heart, but there are still some obstacles out there. Views and opinions, does that resonate with anybody? Kind of believing that the world is organized in a hierarchy and some people matter more than others. You're an other, you're different from me, and then I'm going to treat you differently. Or sometimes we just feel a kind of an inadequacy or a lack in our own lives, and it makes it really difficult to feel the generosity to send metta and goodwill to others. We get upset about the world, and I think we get upset because we care so deeply about it. It's hard to watch all the pain and suffering that's out there. I don't know how many of you are familiar with Joanna Macy. She's this wonderful elder in the Buddhist community, and she says this is a dark time filled with suffering and uncertainty. And it's natural that we feel the trauma of the world. So don't be afraid of the anguish you feel, or the anger or the fear, because these responses arise from the depth of your caring and the truth of the interconnectedness of all beings. So it's challenging. We have our views and opinions, the hierarchy, or our own feelings of lack. And sometimes it's really hard to extend care towards some of the people we believe who are causing the suffering. We have this guideline today of not mentioning any specifics of the times that we're living in. Steve reminded me when we were talking about it that, where did I put that? We could have been born in Russia or North Korea. Or how about Alabama in 1960s or 1950s? I was remembering, I don't know why it was such a strong memory, of Governor George Wallace standing there in front of the University of Alabama, preventing these young students. All they wanted was an education. Segregation now, segregation tomorrow, segregation forever. I remember him standing there, and the look on his face, it was so filled with anger and hate. I didn't have a practice back then, but if I could time travel and go back, I was thinking about how much I know how that anger and hate and fear feels inside of me. I think I could have extended some wishes for ease for him, wishes for peace for him. You know, I've done my own name calling. It feels awful. I've done my own kind of just shouting and othering and putting you over in this category and me over in this, and I'm right and you're wrong. And the longer I've practiced, the more I've gotten in touch with how it doesn't really feel that good. It feels okay for a little bit. You know, you kind of belong to your group, and that feels really good. But one of the things we also have to remember is the Buddha warned us, look at, you know, who are the groups that we're part of? And are they practicing the kind of sila, the kind of care that we want to be part of? Totally lost whatever I was going to say right here. We've been warned that if you hang out with fools, that your own tendency, my own tendency for foolishness, might be encouraged. So what is it like to meet the world with a heart and mind filled with friendliness? Our life is our practice. We come on day-longs, we go on retreats, we sit on our cushions or chairs, but really our life is our practice. We bring our practice to the world. Narayan talked about metta being engagement and equanimity being disentanglement. So you start with the engagement of metta and you allow the compassion to arise and you allow the joy to arise and you remember the balance that is offered from equanimity. And sometimes we just make a commitment. In Seattle Insight right now, we're spending the whole year on the paramis, and the month of September is resolve. I remember back Right after 9/11, 2001, one of the Spirit Rock teachers, Sylvia Borstein, put this out in writing somewhere. I don't remember the different places that you could read it, but she vowed to not add any anger to the already volatile situation. So sometimes our Brahma Viharas, our heart practices, can take the form of making a vow. I'm not going to add any more anger, hate, fear, contraction, othering, alienating, demonizing to the situation. We can't control much. We learn that just in sitting practice. You know, we learn what we can control and what we can't control. So we take care of what we can take care of. Equanimity has so much to teach us. It's one of its main characteristics is to arrest the mind, but before it falls into extremes. It allows us to be present with all of the different changing conditions and experiences. And instead of trying to control what can never be controlled, we can find a sense of safety and security in just being able to meet what is actually happening. Cultivating this balance of mind. And we are called to do what can be done. We're called to stay engaged in the world. We're part of the world, however challenging it is. I can't remember which teacher said this, but maybe she didn't coin the phrase, but I love it. Microactivism. You know, from this pervading sense of goodwill, from the commitment to not add to the negativity, the volatility, from the knowledge of our deep interconnectedness with each other, we take small steps. We help heal the world. Sylvia Borstein has written this, that all of creation is a huge, interconnected, amazing production of events unfolding in concert with each other, with no separation at all. We get off course, we get confused, but we remember the Buddha's words to move with sureness into the future. And remember that we don't have to move into the whole future all at once, just the next step. I want to end with this beautiful line from a poem from Rainier Maria Rilke. I've been reading it and thinking about it for years, and he says this, "Perhaps everything terrible is, in its deepest being, something that needs our love." Practicing with the Brahma Viharas keeps us in such close touch with that love and caring that I believe is natural within us. So here we are, strife, division, volatility, anger, fear, hatred, the whole, in Yiddish we would say the whole mishpucha, you know, it's everything is out there. And how do we engage with the world? And we have choices as to how we engage. And I think we take along with us that toolkit of the Brahma Viharas, that kindness, that softer heart. And sometimes we find that it's really hard to send metta to anybody. In some moments, it's just hard for whatever reason. In those moments, send it back to yourself. No one is more deserving of kindness and care than each of us. But we take this as kind of a toolkit because we're engaged with the world. We have our views and opinions. I don't want to let them go. It's part of being a good citizen. We read, we listen, we reflect, we grow to understand, and then we make good choices, our best choices that we can. Those come from views and opinions and studying and listening. But one of the things that doesn't have to change is our commitment to nourishing that caring inside of us. We take that with us as we continue to engage with the world. Thank you for your kind attention.